This is the Strategy Show on Cricket, only better. Welcome back to Cricket, only better, show 80. I'm Ed Hawkins, and breathed. Some rare downtime on the cricket betting calendar this week, but there is no rest for the wicked, is there, Sam Collins?
Indeed not, though. This is the Strategy Show, a great chance for us to do a deep dive on the process of betting on cricket itself, rather than Ed wibbling on about boundary percentage or toss bias.
Now, I might do a bit of that, to be fair, but with IPL postponed, we're fortunate to have some space to focus properly on general strategy and answer this question: how do you make money betting on cricket?
Is this a good time to ask whether our best bets are actually making any money?
What a great question. Not as if we've scripted this whatsoever. An 8-1 winner last week, praise be to Zimbabwe's Regis Chakabava, who copped for top run scorer. We're now standing at plus 13.27.
But changes are afoot for our best bets. I want to add a bit of spice to this show, so I've come up with a way to pit our regular guests against each other. Paul Krishnamurti of betting.betfair and Richard Mann of sportinglab.com are the victims.
Stay tuned for that. Let's get things rolling with our stat of the week. This week's stat of the week comes from Stephen, brackets Cricksheet, at Cricksheet with no K on Twitter. And this is taking in the Zimbabwe versus Pakistan test match. Should have been going on towards the start of this week, but of course isn't, because it wasn't particularly competitive. There's been quite a lot of noise about that, and that it's the same people saying they shouldn't be playing each other, and Zimbabwe should be struck off from the top table. So he says, in response to that awful take about Zimbabwe being allowed to play tests anymore, Zimbabwe in their first 115 tests have 13 wins. India in their first 115 tests had 15 wins. I thought this would appeal to your sensibilities, Sam, of the big three taking up all the pie for themselves.
indeed. Well, the way to go for equality.
Yeah, it also plays into a bit of our strengths on the Strategy Show this week, because we're getting a lot of mismatches and test cricket. So what are the other markets or other strategies to take advantage of when you've got such mismatches taking place?
Right, let's get the guys on before we do that little bit of housekeeping. Richard Mann of sportinglab.com and Paul Krishnamurti of betting.betfair, you're back again. Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Hello. Lovely to hear your voices, like a weekly rhythm. Excellent. Ed Hawkins, tell us, please, what is going on in the world?
Yeah, Pakistan's Super League is supposed to start on June the 2nd, but it's now likely to be held in the UAE, which is good news, of course, because we know those pitches well. I think it was 13 of the 14 games were won by the Chaser in the last Pakistan Super League before they postponed. Will we get a toss pass in the UAE as well? There's been loads of squad changes for the PSL, and we'll be previewing the tournament over two special shows from next week. An outright odds check for you at the moment is Karachi 11-4 favourites with Betfair Sportsbook, 3-1 Islamabad United, 10-3 Lahore Qalandars, 7-2 Peshawar Zalmi, and 9-1 the David Quetta Gladiators. Karachi are top of the table with 3 wins from 5. However, notable churn on these squads. Rashid Khan no longer with Lahore, for example, replaced by Shakib Al Hassan. Quetta have added Andre Russell. Is that a good thing? We'll find out over the next 2 weeks. Karachi, however, have lost 4 overseas players: Colin Ingram, Dan Christian, Mohammad Nabi, and Joe Clark, replaced with Martin Guptill, Zadran, Litton Das, and Tisara Pereira. Not such a good swap, may I suggest.
Ironically, for a strategy show, one thing pre-COVID which has not been accounted for, postponements and different squads halfway through, is seems to be the case. Still, Richard Mann, are you looking forward to the Pakistan Super League resumption?
Absolutely. I think, what have we been now, about a week without IPL, and we're already missing her dearly. So no, it'd be great to get some T20 cricket back. Like as Ed was saying, it's going to take a while to get our heads around around the new squads and trying to work out who's best placed now. But no, really looking forward to it. And I think looking forward as well, if the T20 World Cup does move to the UAE as well, I think we could get some really good clues over the next few weeks for that as well. So players to look out for and things like that. Hopefully we can snare a little bit of value looking forward.
Paul, I sense you're itching to take on Karachi given those ins and outs.
Not exactly, but it has massively changed my strategy in that when the Pakistan Super League came to its early conclusion or postponement, I just about convinced myself that Karachi were the standout best team and this was now the time to get on. But this has obviously thrown a spanner in the works and now I'd be more probably with Islamabad. But really, as we say, the toss very important. There's not a lot that much between these sides, especially after the changes. So really, I'm just going to be really boring and just say back the outsiders. He's came.
It was ever thus. Okay, right. Still no word on IPL resumption, although do check out Ed Hawkins' piece on betting.betfair about why Delhi are sitting pretty. Calm down, Paul. And let's get on with the strategy show. How, why, what, who? Cricket betting, hardest game in the world. Richard Mann, I can't believe we're only asking you this now. You're a fully fledged member of the Cobb team. But how did you get into it?
I suppose we've all got different ways that we've ended up here. I started off as a racing journal, actually, at the PA, and that was my way into this industry. But I've always had a keen interest in cricket. I played from a young age, and I just found myself as a punter, really, leaning more and more towards cricket as time went on. Whether it's easy or whether I was just better at it, I just felt that it was a better way for me to turn a profit. And eventually I moved to Sporting Life and very lucky to be writing for them now on cricket every week. And I probably now I'm taking it as seriously as I've ever done. Probably not in staking. I'm a new father now and I've got a mortgage and all those sort of things that hold you back a little bit. But certainly in terms of following it more deeply than I ever have done before, I'm really serious onto it now.
Interesting. So no six-figure bets for you on Joe Denley to be the top run scorer in the Ashes this week?
No.
Okay, right. Paul, what was the epoch-shaking moment in your cricket betting life that made you think, I've got to do this for a living?
I'm not going to say an epoch-shaking moment, but an era. So I had spent 15 years, maybe, as 13 years, maybe, as a totally obsessive cricket fan, but just a fan. You know, I gambled on other things. I've gambled on horses and football. Snooker, and then I got Sky Sports. I started watching everything, and then that Australia team came around. And you know, for 6-7 years at least, maybe 10 years, it was just such a safe bet. You know, you had Shane Warne, Glenn McGrath bowling teams out, so you could just almost guarantee every match you could back Australia when they needed to bowl a team out to win the game. And you had little things like if they lost early wickets, back by Australia runs because they had Gilchrist coming in. And they just, it's amazing. I can still remember it. The win ratio was just unbelievable for 5 or 6 years. It just seemed like this is a sport where form stands up. And the real epoch moment, I think, was the World Cup in 99, which was just literally, when they won that amazing over of South Africa, lost their semi-final. I'm literally dancing around the house for 2 hours. You know, I was major in Australia. So that's the moment.
I love it. There's something inherently incredibly clinical about the best team any of us will ever see transferring you into a betting genius. But I want to talk general strategy in this section. So come back to you, Richard and Paul, for a broad brush. But quickly, heading to Ed Hawkins, because he's probably feeling a bit left out. Ed, what's your take on strategy?
I'm not going to be very specific in perhaps the way that Richard and Paul are. I'll leave that to them. I'd say one of the most important things you can do, and this goes for any kind of betting, is to make a record of the bets that you make, because you'll work out what you're good at and what you're bad at. An example of that might be, from my own experiences, I used to do quite a lot of top bowler bets about 5 or 6 years ago, and found out that I was absolutely hopeless at top bowler bets. So I stopped doing them. And that helps the profit and loss figures no end. So make sure you keep a note down of what you're betting on and when, and you'll get a real idea of where your strengths and weaknesses are.
Okay, sounds very sensible indeed. Richard, what's your golden rule or your big strategy secret?
Well, I'd endorse just what Ed said there. You know, something isn't working for you. You know, it's not about ego. It's just give up on it and concentrate on something you know you are good at. And obviously making a record helps you do that. The big thing for me is getting a betting bank. It doesn't matter how much it is, how much you can afford. I think if you've got a set bank, it makes it much more easy to absorb losing runs, and we all go on them. There's no point saying that we don't. We do. You know, it can be really tough at times, but I think if you've got a bank and you're betting a percentage of that bank, you can absorb those runs mentally. You can cope with them better. And then when the good times come and you start finding form again, you've still got something to play with, so you can keep going. I mean, it depends how you want to do it, but for instance, if you could afford £500, you could go £10 a point, and that gets you 50 bets. And so even if you have 10 losing bets, which can happen, it doesn't matter how good you are, you've still got a bank, so you can still keep going. Or, you know, £500 might be too much for you, whatever it is, but work out a percentage so you can maybe afford, I don't know, 50 bets. And I think you'll be a much better place going forward. I think that is the best bit of advice I could give anyone.
Richard, just jutting in there before Sam comes back, do you find you have sort of peaks and troughs where you can go on, you know, a long run and basically you can't buy a winner? I mean, I remember last season when we came back from COVID, I blamed the fact that the natural rhythm of the international calendar or the cricket calendar had thrown everything out. And I was just on the worst run I've ever had in about 10 years and only actually scraped a profit in the end. So do you find you have peaks and troughs, and for those troughs, how do you get, how do you advise people to, you know, kind of keep going, to keep the faith? Because that can be really, really difficult, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm personally very streaky. I always have been, and it's something I've kind of learned to accept now. I just accept that things will go against you and they can go against you for long periods. I think it's a real game of discipline, this, isn't it? And it's a game of mental fortitude. It can be really tough at times. I think you've got to keep going. I think what you were alluding to earlier, if you know you're good at something, stick to it. If you know you're not good at something, just put it in the bin and accept top bowler markets or whatever they may be. They're just not for me, and leave them alone. And I think if you've kept a record and you know you're good at something, just keep going with it. Having a bank obviously allows you to do that. And look, I know I'm preaching here, and it's not easy to do with modern life and obviously got financial constraints everywhere else. But if you can do it and you're in a position to do it, and it doesn't matter how much it is, if you're betting £2 a point, whatever you're comfortable with, I would definitely advise you do that, because I'm sure Paul will back this up. It really is a game that can test you mentally, and you can go on such long losing streaks that you just need to have a little bit of support there, if you like.
Absolutely. I mean, I endorse both of what you're saying. These are just the core things. If you want to make money at gambling, you have to do those things. You have to keep a record, have to keep a bank, have to have discipline. And the final point there, you have to have a good temperament, a solid temperament, because you will be driven mad. Especially when we're doing something here that takes place all round the clock, all year round. Like, you're having your sleeping patterns messed up. I mean, I remember having the worst series I can ever remember was the Big Bash of 2017. It was just changing time zones suddenly, getting up at that time in the morning every morning and hardcore trading. I couldn't handle it. After about 15 games, I just gave up because I was just throwing money away everywhere. So, you know, there's all of that. You've got to prepare. You've got to take a professional approach. However small or however big you do it, the more professional approach you take, the better you will fare, definitely. Regarding my one golden rule, though, it's more specific. Once a cricket match starts, simply be a contrarian. Go against the market, back the extremes, back outsiders. One of the reasons cricket is such a good sport to bet in is that this stuff happens all the time. You know, I watch these runs markets, and the amount of 100-1 chances, 50-1 chances, 101, 102 chances to get beaten, it's incredible. It happens all the time. Test matches, how many times have we seen a test match where all three teams trade under even money, or, you know, one of them comes in from 100 into 2-1? If you do that, you're back in the outsider all the time in cricket. The very nature of it is it changes quickly. It changes very, very quickly and very dramatically because of the conditions or a good session from a bowler or a good innings. So you will not go far wrong. Don't be a favourite backer generally in play.
Just jumping on there, Paul. So if you're saying then if you had preconceived ideas going into the match, as soon as it starts, you park all that then and just almost looking at the markets and forgetting strong opinions you had beforehand. I mean, it must be quite tricky if you had a view beforehand and then you get in play and you're thinking, right, you know, I'm going to back the extremes here.
Well, the thing is, you can do both. I mean, you know, I have so many positions running in a match at one time. But just to take, for example, the Test match situation, even if you've backed a draw, right, and the draw goes into 5-1 on day three or day four, unless it's there's a rock solid reason it can't lose, it's worth taking on because there can always be a few wickets, right? When you see and we'll get more into this later with specific strategies. Any situation, cricket is all about wickets falling in batches, right? If cricket matches all involve wickets in batches, you never see an innings where a team gets 300 with 10, 30 partnerships. Right, so they're inevitably going to be, and that's actually with any sport. Every sport has got a trajectory, and the key to playing it in running, irrespective of whatever you've done pre-match, which can be a separate bet that you don't leave alone, right? The in-running stuff is all about the trajectory and knowing at which point of the swing to get on. It's just trading like that.
Okay, guys, can I steer you towards talking about value now? What is it? How do you know when you've got it? Ed Hawkins, I'm going to come to you first on that. And Paul and Richard, feel free to chip in, tell him if he's right or wrong.
Well, I suppose one man's value is another man's something for the bin. But value is essentially you as a punter saying, I know something that the bookmakers do not. And that basically comes down purely for me to research. Now, if you can research a bet and you can back up a bet with data and then with your own eye, with your own opinion of a game or a player, from your knowledge of watching cricket, that is probably enough to reckon you've got value. In more sort of specific terms, and I will definitely talk about this later, tell me how often a team wins, tell me how often a guy top bats or top bowls. You know, if you're going to be betting on markets, you need to be able to tell me what price that guy is over the last year, 2 years, 3 years. And then if you've got an edge, you've got data which is saying that he should be shorter in the betting than the bookmakers are making him, then that is an edge to go forward. And that would be sort of my definition of value. Any sort of statistic data which you can back up with your own view of the game and shows that the bookmakers have got something wrong.
Paul, Richard, anything to add to that?
Yeah, that's completely right. I mean, on its most simple level, if you back a 10-1 chance, do you believe that that outcome will happen more often than 1 in 10 times? And if you believe it is, then you should be backing it. It should be value. And furthermore, just to add to that, so that's one way of doing the pre-match stuff, but all of these in-running trades that I'm talking about, you can apply the same logic. Because say we've got a line at 1.2 and you lay something at 1.2 and then you set an order to back that same result at 1.5 or you have that plan in your head. Well, that trade, 1.2 to 1.5, amounts to even money. So the bet then is, if I lay this 1.2 chance, will 50% of the time, at some point in the innings, it come back to 1.5? And that's where I think you get amazing value, because actually, just the nature of the game, as I'm saying, you get loads of that, loads of back and forth on all the lines.
Yeah, just another point on taking prices, you know, 10-1 shots when you can prove that it shouldn't be 10-1. That goes back to Richard's earlier point about being streaky. If you're a pure value punter, you are going to be streaky, so you're going to have those peaks and troughs. So you need to come to terms with the fact that if you're taking wrong prices, it doesn't mean you're just going to be, you know, smashing out winners left, right and centre. You are going to have those ups and downs.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's definitely something I find with my own tipping and punting. And I think the thing with it is, and quite often I try and tell myself all the time to trust my eye, use as much data as you can. But if you see something, you know, back it up. I remember, I'm probably going to talk about this later, but I remember probably my biggest winner was a guy called Dean Brownlee, top scoring for New Zealand in the series against South Africa back in 2013. Being dropped from the New Zealand side, he came back in when Ross Taylor lost the captaincy. Now, they went away to South Africa. He grew up, he's an Australian from birth, grew up at Perth, really good puller and cutter on fast bouncy pitches. I'd seen a little bit of him and knew that, and knew he'd play well in South Africa. He's 20-1 and 16-1 for the series top bat. He was up against Kane Williamson and McCullum and Guptill, so he was clearly up against it. But I just knew that as a player, he'd be well suited to conditions, and I didn't need to price up the market, if you like. I just knew that there was no way he was a 16-20-1 chance. He won, he scraped home, but I think him winning probably isn't the moral of the story here. Just the fact is, if you see something and trust your eye, and if you've been doing it for long enough, you can see the value for yourself.
Wise words. That's is that Ed Smith or Richard Mann talking? Right. We are learning, guys. I think excellent stuff. Coming up next, some specific strategies to make money on cricket. Get your notebooks out. This is the part of the strategy show where we give you the real gold. Paul Krishnamurti of betting.betfair and Richard Mann from sportinglife.com have their money-making mantras at the ready. But first, I'm coming to you, Ed Hawkins.
Okay. The strategy for you on the top batsman markets, because it's a particular strength, I think, with me, and you've been following betting.betfair, following through the IPL, you've made quite a bit of money on your top bats, and it's quite a simple way of doing it. Looking at the records of individual players over the last 2 years and 3 years and working out how often they actually win. And this goes back to the point I was making about value. Let's take Kahal Rahul as an example, the Kings Punjab player. Now, we know that he wins 40% of the time on our data. So why would we not back him as a 6-4 shot when he's being priced up at 7-4 or bigger in the IPL for a top innings run scorer bet? And conversely, why would we back a guy, say Joe Root, who I often go on about, at something like 11-4 to top score in the first innings of a test match when he's going off, when he should be going off bigger than that, 4-1, 5-1 on his actual win rate? How often does he actually win? I still don't understand why anyone would bet someone those short prices when their win rate several ticks higher than the actual price you're getting with the bookmaker.
I knew we couldn't get away without you shouting names and numbers. That's us, Ed Hawkins. Paul, what is your big pointer?
Simply, in any form of cricket, but particularly in test matches, always oppose a team on a well-set partnership. This gets back against the trajectory thing. So you set yourself, obviously it depends on the conditions, right? It could be that you set a target of 30 or 50 or 100 or 150 or two of them. But what I'm saying is when a partnership reaches a target, let's say 100, at that point, you should go against that partnership continuing. Now, one way you could do that is by going unders on the runs. That's one what I often do. But I would say in a test match, particularly, I'd go against it in the outright market. So your classic sort of situation might be team are batting to save the draw. There's only two results in play on the final day. Let's say they're 100 for three at lunch, and the draw is, I don't know, 4-6, we'll say. They then put on another 50 after lunch, so 160 for three or something. That 4-6 is going to go down to 4-1 on 5-1. It looks like it's done. It's a cheap lay, but as we know, I mean, how many times have we seen four or five wickets collapse very quickly in any innings, but particularly on the final day when they're desperately trying to save a match and the pitch is deteriorating? Okay, so I think you're always getting value at that point in the game. You could also do it on the test match end market, on the session in which the match finishes. You know, always, basically always keep the batch of quick wickets on side.
Richard Mann.
Yes, so I'm probably going to be a little bit more specific. Just something that's worked for me over the years is back middle order away batsmen in test matches in South Africa. I alluded to Dean Brownlee, didn't I, earlier, and it's something I sort of, from about 2012, 2013, really latched onto. They use a Kookaburra ball there. South Africa always had brilliant seamers, and I've always felt that batting in the top three there for away teams is just impossible, particularly when they had Vernon Philander. I genuinely thought it was the hardest job in cricket. But the pitches generally have pace in them, And if you can get in and get past that new ball, the Kookaburra ball gets soft, you can score quickly and you really get value for runs. And I think the middle order is just a terrific place to bat in South Africa away from the new ball. Great example was Sri Lanka's tour there in December 2020. The first test there, number four, Shandor Mohammed, 84. He was 11-4 to make a 50 in that innings. I remember it well. Dhananjaya made 76. He was 5-1 to make a 50 when he came in. Dequello at number six made 49. Shanaka at number seven made 66. The second innings was a bit of a washout. Harasanga made a 50 down at number seven, but Dhananjaya and Chandimal were injured. And then even the year before, England went out there in 2019. Ollie Pope averaged 88 from number six, played three of the four tests. He would have probably top scored for the series had he not had that sickness bug, ruled him out of the opener. Stokes averaged 48 from number five. Root averaged 45 from number four. These are in tough conditions to bat in. Going back a year earlier, even better really. First test, Pakistan, number six top scored. Second test, number seven top scored. In the second innings of the second test, 5-4. And it just goes on. And Sri Lanka were there in 2019. Kusal Perera made that 50 and then 153 in the second innings when they won that memorable test match. He was batting at number five. You know, there's loads of examples of this, of openers finding it tough in South Africa, 20-3, and then the middle order comes in and can make hay. It's a long way away, but when the winter comes, India go there next. I'll be wanting the middle order on. South Africa's still got a really good pace attack. Nokia, Rabada with a new ball. If they can get rid of the openers, Rohit Sharma, Pujara, Rishad Pant, Rahane, those guys in the middle order, they'll definitely be value in some form. And that's a strategy I will take forward.
That's brilliant, Matt. And just so, I mean, that really complements what Ed was saying about the top batsman stats. So this is it. If you're doing your research for a match, first of all, you have your stats about how often does this person win the market. That's a clue. But then you tailor it to the ground or to the teams even. How often on, you know, the Wankhede Stadium does an opener finish top bat, or how often is it a number four? And once you correlate all of those stats on the ground, maybe the conditions, maybe the opponents, you'll end up getting some really clear signals.
Yeah, on that point about players, how they do against particular teams, you can go to Cricmetrics, a website, and you can look up, this is T20 cricket, how a batsman does against a particular bowler. Really important to do. I think probably the new era of cricket betting with the amount of data available now. So if you can put all these planets into line, you've got ground form, you've got your win rate on side, and then you can actually go and look at how these batsmen do against individual bowlers. You get three planets into line, and you'll be absolutely fine if you keep your discipline with those three planets. You may not bet as often as you were before, but I guarantee if you're putting those three planets in line on your top run scorer bets, you'll be up significantly by the end of the year.
Brilliant stuff, guys. Who needs an actual match to preview? At this stage of the show, obviously, we normally go to our best bet section, but we've got a surprise in store for Paul and Richard this week.
Right, best bets is when we pick our top wagers of the week's action. As there isn't any, it's given Sam the perfect chance to be a little bit naughty. He wants to spice up the best bets section, add an edge, put some competitive juice in. Explain yourself, Sam.
Yeah, I just think it's such a shame that we've had Paul and Richard all this time, but we haven't been pitting them against each other. Two experts in a fight to the betting death, adding some intrigue, drama, and maybe, hopefully not too much, acrimony. How's it going to work, Ed?
So I think we're going to give them 5 units each week, and they can place as many bets as they like. We'll alternate first picks. We'll keep an eye on the running totals and then see how we go.
Excellent stuff. How do you feel about this, Richard?
Well, after last week's performance, me and Paul banged our heads together, didn't we? And we came up with Regis Chakwavha to top score for Zimbabwe. He came good at the weekend. So, you know, two brains are usually better than one, but instead you want to pit us against each other when we were coming together to bring so much good and joy to the listeners.
We can still retain a little bit of that as well. Paul, how are you feeling about this? I want to give you the chance to start the ball rolling with some mental disintegration of Richard.
Look, I mean, it's all good, Craig. I think we absolutely should do that. But let's be honest, we do agree a lot on this show, right? I mean, okay, I've got one up at the moment, and you lot all dissed Delhi, right? And I was going up for Delhi. But, you know, generally speaking, we agree on a lot of stuff. And absolutely, the more you crack 2, 3, 4 heads together, the more you can solve these puzzles. So, and there's an extra incentive now to actually get them right.
Excellent. I think it's going to be great. Come back next week as battle is poised. Thank you so much, guys, for this strategy show. I know I've learned something. I hope everybody has at home too.
And that's your lot for Cricket Only Better Show 80. Come back for Show 81, where we start our Pakistan Super League preview. Until next time.